You are listening to the cycling podcast, at the Tour de France in association with RAFA, the fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with RAFA in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam. Stage 21, today we're in Paris.
Where are we, Francois? We're actually walking towards La Madeleine. La Madeleine is a beautiful neoclassical church in the very center of Paris, and that's where the team buses are parked now, you know, for the last stage of the Tour de France. So we're in Paris, in the center of the world, in the center of France, and in the center of Paris, so in the center of everything.
Bathed in sunshine.
We were nearly very much in the center of everything earlier this afternoon, weren't we? Because we found ourselves driving along the course through the Louvre.
Oh,
there.
Yes.
We were allowed onto the course by the gendarme, trying to get to our hotel, which is just kind of over there, and the course is just over there, and we had a nervous few minutes. I was nervous, you were driving, Richard.
I was kind of nervous for once, you know, knowing that sometimes gendarmes in Paris these days can be a little bit nervous. My impression was that we were forced now, once we were in the circuit, to go in circles
just keep
forever.
Driving, right?
Yeah.
We could have won the Champs-Élysées stage.
We could have done, but you know, the motto of the cycling podcast these days is Francois says relax.
Yes. That was my slogan.
Yeah, for once, I mean, the Buffalo was far more relaxed than I was. But
I might have had an adrenaline shot already on the way in. I just saw some words shared with a fellow driver, hopefully not a listener to the podcast, by an ex-listener to the podcast. So we're going to do what was a tradition when we used to come to Paris every year and just walk around the buses, giving every team a score out of 7 in honour of Magnus Cort and his hotel ratings. We'll give every team a score out of 7, where 7 is excellent and 0 is not very good. Cofidis there, Lionel.
Cofidis, yes. Coffee disappointing.
I expected a bit more from Cofidis this tour because they've had a decent season.
Well, Jesus Hurtado won the Mont Ventoux challenge race, didn't he, 10 days or so before the tour, ahead of Romain Bardet. But I think now we know that said more about Romain Bardet's form perhaps than Jesus Hurtado. But Hurtado is their best place rider overall, 20th. They had a couple of top 10s on the stages. They were well represented in the breaks. Stefan Rossetto was up the road more than anyone else in the tour, I think, until we got to the mountains, and then it gets a little bit fuzzy. Natnail Bahani was also, like Rossetto, won the combativity prize one day, but an underwhelming-ish tour for them, and a real sense that with next year's team changes, maybe Cedric Vasseur's kind of revamp will be in year 2 of perhaps 3, and maybe they'll be a bit more competitive next year.
Yeah, remember last year Ola actually did a kilometer 0 on the team with Cedric Vasseur, and he said that there was a bottle of champagne in the bus waiting for the first victory in the tour for more than a decade. I guess the bottle of champagne is still there. I mean, if it ages well, it will be quite good and full of, you know, bubbles when they finally win one. So for me, 2, it would be even generous, maybe.
How old was the oldest bottle of champagne we had at the Laurent Perrier house? About 55 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, dear Cofidis. Sorry. Let's move away from the Cofidis bus, and the next bus along is Astana. Disappointing from Astana.
Well, given the spring they had and the riders they've got, even the riders that were here in the tour, we really expected a lot more, but they had everything on Jakob Fuglsang, didn't they? And so the huge disappointment of him having to pull out of the tour after that crash on the day to Nîmes, a real kind of nothing crash as well. He was in the top 10 at the time, which means that Alexei Lutsenko is their best place rider overall, 19th, I think. And the big surprise is that they didn't manage to recalibrate in time to really get into the breaks in the final week's mountain stages and make an impression on the race. Best result, Peo Bilbao, second to Simon Yates in the Pyrenees. Francois can give the scores. He's the authority here.
Oh, yeah, we forgot about a score for Cofidis.
Well, I give 2 to Cofidis. If I give 2 to Cofidis, I should probably give 2.5 to... Or 3 to Astana, but it's a little bit generous as well. I mean, the problem I think with Astana is in the past they decided to be so stage hunters, and which is a tactic that the next post Mitchelton Scott did very well. They managed to get from their GC ambitions to their stage ambitions. This time it was all for Jakob Fuglsang, who actually was one of the top three favorites at the beginning of the tour, and they were never able to switch from dedicating their work to the GC and go for stages. Whereas in the past, remember last year, they were the Mitchelton Scott of last year's tour. I mean, they won many stages, and maybe at the and not really at the expense of the GC ambition of Jakob Fuglsang, because he finished much better last year than he did this year.
Yeah, I think a team that was out of sorts and affected maybe by riders thinking of next year and moving on. That we know at least three riders there are moving on. Pale Bilbao is another one. Mitchelton Scott, you mentioned there, Francois, very nimble performance from him, because they came in supporting Adam Yates for overall. He was disappointing. I had an awkward encounter with him in the restaurant last night where he looked at me out the sides of his eyes. But he had a poor... Don't look at me like that, Lionel.
On the sides of his eyes, corners of his eyes.
Squinted at me as we passed. Anyway,
I'm going to say I met Jack Hague in a place where, the ladies don't go.
Come on, you had a pee alongside Jack Hague.
Yeah, and he was, as usual, great guy. You know,
there's one rider I'm going to have a pee alongside at the tour. It might well be Jack Hague. I can imagine that wouldn't be nearly as awkward as certain others. But Mitchelton Scott adapted very well to Adam Yates' poor form, and four stage wins in the end, with two for Simon Yates, one for Matteo Trentin, and one for Daryl Impey.
Yeah, a real excellent plan B, that, really, wasn't it? So maybe we should give them a score for plan A, probably only 3.
Generous.
Okay, 2. And okay, a score for plan B, I would say 6. I mean, 7 maybe even for plan B, because that's the biggest challenge for all of the teams when they come in with one objective. So clearly they came in with kind of a split objective, and it worked out well for them.
Hugely impressive, actually. And then AG2R here, we have, well, Romain Bardet won the King of the Mountains, but not what they came here for. Roman, a very hugely disappointing performance here from Bardet, not showing any of the ability that he's shown in the past to really challenge for GC.
The problem is, there was a problem this season, all season, with Romain Bardet. He said he would study and review what went wrong. He managed to salvage some pride and a little bit of something. I mean, the his glamour for the French.
You could say dignity, but unfortunately he's gone out today and wore an entirely polka dot outfit, so he's lost his dignity again.
Absolutely did. Yeah, in a way, it's funny, the consolation prize for the French, great French riders of the past, this generation, these past few years, has been the popular jersey, because it was won by Warren Barguil 2 years ago, by Julien Alaphilippe last year. The problem with the AG2R team, it's so based around Romain Bardet and so based around his ambition to win the Tour de France, that once he got dropped, and he got dropped pretty quickly, the old team collapsed completely. I mean, Tony Galopin, Alexis Goujard, there are other good riders in that team who could have gone for a stage or something else. There was a picture of them all around Romain Bardet, a little bit like, it was not the kind of suicide we saw when Arnaud Démare, was with all his teammates around him losing time at the time cut, but it was not far from that. It's kind of a major shipwreck, actually, for AG2R. So, 2.
Oh, I mean, the King of the Mountain jersey surely has to bump them up to 4, but then back down to 3 for the shorts today, I think. Okay, the thing about the shorts is that the dots
and
on the jersey...
Socks, helmet, bike, everything.
The dots on the jersey are not to my taste. They're in rows. I don't like it. The dots on the shorts are different sizes, and they're all almost overlapping one another. But the other thing about the King of the Mountains competition for Bardet is it's the lowest winning points total since this current point system was introduced in 2011. He only went over the top of one major climb in first place. He really only won it by default. It wasn't the most keenly contested competition. If Bernal had won the stage yesterday, yesterday, he wouldn't have won the jersey at all, and he was way dropped. So, but at the end of the day, he goes into the record books having won the King of the Mountains. And Richard, as you pointed out today, there's that lovely shot of him by the roadside as a little boy watching the 1996 tour go past. Richard Virenque is in the polka dot, so you know it means something, obviously. And it's well overshadowed, I think, by the other Frenchmen in this race, to say the least. Romain Bardet,
shall we get out of earshot of any members of staff at Dimension Data before we talk about them?
We have to review each team's performance without fear or favour, a phrase I used in something we did earlier today, I think. But Dimension Data, I mean, I won't name our colleague who sent us a message today saying, has anyone used the phrase un tour sans yet in regard to Dimension Data? They've had a pretty demoralising tour, haven't they? Roman Kreuziger 16th, but really without making great deal of impact. A couple of top tens, I think. Giacomoni solo.
Francois is doing his best to salvage their tour as we speak.
he's placed his little blue cat mascot Doraemon Poulidor on the Dimension Data team car, and I have to say that possibly their highlight of the race.
Oh dear. Let's move on.
The fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and Watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam.
Thank you very much indeed to our headline sponsors, Rafa. And as you heard there, you can follow the team, EF Education First. They sponsor EF Gone Racing, are the films they've been producing behind the scenes at the Tour de France. You can find them at rafa.cc or on Rafa's YouTube channel. And by coincidence, we're standing outside the EF Education First bus, and this might test your without fear or favour principles as well.
Why didn't we rate Dimension Data?
Sorry, do you want to go back? What would you like to give Dimension Data?
I don't know. Were they in the race?
Okay, so that says it all, doesn't it, really? Really poor. EF Education First, disappointing tour for them, I would think, given the ambitions they came in with and given the season they've had. I think Uran's performance on GC probably in line with expectations in a way. Michael Woods has been really good, I think, considering he's been riding with quite bad injuries. He's been getting in breaks a lot in his first Tour de France. A disappointment for me was Alberto Betti, all the Tour of Flanders winner. I expected a little bit more from him here.
Yeah, I think especially once Uran's GC challenge was dented by the time loss in the crosswinds, Uran rode pretty well. I mean, he got up the road a couple of times as well, and he was in the front group till relatively late on a number of the big days. But they had bad luck as well, didn't they? TJ Van Garderen crashed out in the first week. That left them a climbing helper down. Uran, possibly with Richie Porte dropping out of the top 10 at the last yesterday, Uran... A kind of an unsatisfactory winner of the Alla Zubeldia prize, perhaps, because, well, probably the pink and blue kit made him visible, more visible than perhaps his performances deserved. But yeah, you can't say they had a seamless, smooth tour. They were one of the less lucky teams, weren't they?
They were. So what's their score?
I think out of 7, 4.3.
3.9.
We'll settle somewhere in the middle. There was a nice moment today featuring Uran and the other Colombian riders who massed at the front as they were heading towards Paris. We're just walking up to the Place de la Concorde now, and we'll see the closing stages of today's stage on the Champs-Élysées. But there was a lovely moment when the Colombian riders in the race all went to the front and celebrated with Egan Bernal. You know, such a big moment in Colombia, and very nice to see some of those guys who, you know, like Nairo Quintana, might have fancied that would be him one day, really celebrating Bernal's moment.
We're in front of the buses of team Gendarmerie.
Have they had a good tour?
I think they've had a good tour. I mean, I didn't hear anything special. I think, yeah, the gendarmes... Yeah,
they helped us out today, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, it's an occasion to remind, you know, how the gendarmes are present on the Tour de France and making sure, you know, everything goes well, because it's a kind of daily miracle. I don't exactly know the number, but I think it's by tens of thousands of them on the roads of France every year, which is very impressive as well.
7 out of 7 for the gendarmerie.
Absolutely. I mean, especially as this year team gendarmerie managed not to spray tear gas into the eyes of the peloton.
Here's the finest chiropractor in pro cycling, Matt Rabin. Hey, Richard, how you doing?
Not bad. How are you, Matt? We've been wanting to get you on the podcast for ages. I know you're an avid listener.
Avid listener. Long-time friend, is it?
Are you, though? I think we'll have to do a... I haven't heard your name read out at the end of any episode.
I'm still waiting for my name to get read out. Love the podcast, as you know. Message every day about it.
You work for EF Education First. We're giving each team a score. What would you give? What would you give your own team?
What would you give us?
Well, yeah, I asked you first.
There was a debate.
There was a debate. Well, I'll give us a...
Out of seven.
I'll give us a seven. out of seven.
Out of seven.
A firm five.
Firm five. Okay.
Yeah. What did you give? What did you give us? What was the consensus?
4.2.
Not bad.
And I said 3.9.
Ooh. Other side of bell curve, 4.5.
I went in the middle, but I think probably given the season they've had so far this year, maybe a bit of a disappointment at the tour.
I would say maybe it's not the tour that set light for us as we'd have liked, but you could say it for about a lot of teams at this year's tour, I think.
Maybe if they'd had their chiropractor here in the first half of the race.
There was a chiropractor here in the first part of the race.
Uh-oh. He doesn't listen to the podcast, does he?
He's not a friend like me, if that's what you mean.
Okay, Matt,
friends like you, Matt, sometimes who needs enemies, eh?
Right, we'll let you get back to work, Matt. Okay, Team Ineos.
The feedback is always much appreciated from Matt, isn't it? Because he's searingly honest about
it. He's very blunt. Here we are at Team Ineos. Do you see them at all in the race?
Well, funny really, not in the way that we'd seen Team Sky in the past. No, they rode in a completely different way, didn't they? And well, I wonder whether now that the dust is settling on Egan Bernal's win, whether that was slightly by design, because you know, would you want to put a 22-year-old into the yellow jersey after like five or six stages or whenever La Planche de Belfi was, and then have him shoulder that whole responsibility with a rider of his type? Perhaps it was a smarter play, knowing they couldn't quite get Geraint Thomas into yellow, just to hang back and not get drawn in until the final few days.
We can say with hindsight that they played a blinder, didn't they? But I was interested that Dylan van Baarle was the man that led them on to the Champs-Élysées here, which is traditional that the yellow team of the yellow jersey comes on to the Champs first, and it was Dylan van Baarle, and I think he has been their outstanding rider. I mean, he was very, very disappointed last year to miss out on tour selection. He's made it this year and more than justified his place. He's been brilliant, but I think Gianni Moss gone. Michał Kwiatkowski's been a huge disappointment here. And Geraint Thomas, you know, so we said it in last night's podcast, I think he should be very, very pleased to finish second at the Tour this year. He'll measure it against his performance last year, of course. It's Luke Rowe getting onto the bus. He was sent home, of course, a few days ago, but he's come back to join the party. Team Ineos, it's a three-week race, isn't it? And everybody always said that it was going to be decided in the Alps.
They won, you know, they have one and two. Maybe the team was disappointed, but my rating is very simple. 7 out of 8.
Seven out of eight?
Very good. Oh, very good.
What's your rating, Lionel?
I can't beat that.
No stage wins.
No.
Unless you count Bernal.
Well, which we kind of can't, because officially it doesn't count as a stage win. Only the times for the GC counted on the day that was cancelled.
Seeing police running.
Always nervous when I see a couple of team gendarmerie riders running up there with their weapons swinging. I think it's a bit like, you know, in a football season, the job is to finish top at the end of the season. No point being top at Christmas. And Team Sky made a habit of being top at Christmas and then carrying it all the way through. This year, perhaps not as strong. They didn't have somebody as imposing and as kind of predictable as Chris Froome. So I think they adapted to the circumstances, and they adapted to the riders they had. And I would say, well, it was kind of a strategic win rather than one where they took a stranglehold on the race and squeezed the life out of it. And I think from a spectacle point of view, we should all be kind of grateful for that, really.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
Thank you to Seb Piquet for reminding us to tell you that this episode of our Tour de France coverage is sponsored by The Economist. The Economist is about far more than just economics and finance. It covers a range of subjects from world politics and business to science, technology, the arts, the environment and sport. And if you would like to get a free copy of The Economist delivered to your door, you can do so by texting the word cycling to 78070. Now, Richard, you've been reading The Economist this week. What has caught your eye?
Yeah, we've also been travelling around France accompanied by The Economist daily podcast, The Intelligence, which is also recommended. But the article that caught my eye is headlined Net Gains, Female Sport Becoming Big Business. And it focuses really on the Women's World Cup, which was held in France recently. Television audience was up from 750 million to a billion. But it was also a financial success. And the article reports on some analysis by Deloitte about sponsorship money coming into women's football. They say that 60% of women's football teams in major leagues now have different shirt sponsors to the men's teams, and that by 2023, the time of the next World Cup, it'll be 100%. In other words, sponsors are coming in to support women's football rather than just sponsoring the women's team as a sort of add-on to the men's team. Now, we're talking a few days after La Course by the Tour de France, the women's one-day race, and what's interesting is that that's grown over the years, but there seems to be some movement at ASO, who organised the Tour de France, to organise a new women's stage race at a time of the year outside of the Tour. They're setting up a department to look at developing this, and you know, the momentum seems to be with women's sport. And what's really interesting about this article is about how so many companies, businesses are seeing women's sport as a good investment. And that, as Julien Proteau, who wrote the story about the new women's event in France, says, that's the thing that's caught ASO's attention.
Well, what's really interesting about women's cycling is that there's the best of both worlds, potentially. Some of the men's teams have women's teams as well, Mitchelton Scott, CCC being a couple of examples. And then there are women's specific teams as well. So there's a lot of potential there for perhaps more men's teams to come in and set up women's teams, but also for the women's sport to attract sponsors in its own right. Anyway, that's just one of a number of fascinating articles in The Economist on a broad range of topics. It means there's really something for everyone in the magazine. And if you'd like to get a free print copy delivered to your door, if you're in the UK, text the word cycling to 78070. That's the word cycling to 78070.
Well, here we are back on the Champs-Élysées, well, the Place de la Concorde, looking down the Champs-Élysées. How far to go, Lionel, in the race?
I'm going to have to update you on that in just 1 second while my Eurosport player fires up on my phone, but probably going to be about 25 kilometres to go, I'd have thought. Maybe a little more.
We better get a move on then, eh? We're outside Team Sunweb. Now, Team Sunweb, they've had a bit of bad luck. They've lost a few riders, but they've had a couple of promising performances, in particular from Leonard Kamna. I think that's the pronunciation. Kamna, are we saying, Francois?
I think I heard it was something like Kamna because of the umlaut on the A. But, you know, my German, unfortunately, is not good enough to...
He's talking about Daniel Fried, yeah. But Kamna. He was outstanding, actually, for such a young rider and a great talent for the future. There's a bunch going past us there. They don't look like they're racing that fast yet, so we've got a bit of time. But Team Sunweb, a strange performance from them. You know, their plan A was obviously Tom Dumoulin. He had to pull out with a knee injury. And they're a team that don't perhaps have the resources of other teams in the event of missing their plan A. Wilco Kelderman expected a bit more from him. He didn't finish. They've had a lot of problems with injury and illness this year.
I have to say, we would have expected more from Michael Matthews. He was second on a stage. There was that strange situation where he was kind of working for Case Bol, you know, a Tour debutant at one point, which speaks volumes about perhaps the overall confidence either in himself or the team's confidence in him. Nicholas Roach got in some breaks. That was good to see. And, yeah, but a huge Tom Dumoulin-shaped hole in their lineup at this Tour. And, well, that may well be a permanent look for them, mightn't it?
Three for Sunweb?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of top tens, maybe they're faring better than some other teams. Michael Matthews, was in contention for not in contention for the green jersey because Sagan was way ahead. But I mean, he had a couple of all right performances, maybe on below par for what he is and the rider he is. But he was there in the finales sometimes. Kamna as well. So I would go more for a 3.5, just average.
Okay. Yep. Groupama FDJ, well, what can we say? I mean, there'll be huge disappointment around
There's not long to go at all. There'll be huge disappointment around that bus, obviously, with what happened to Thibaut Pinot. But really, they can hold their heads up high, I think. Great team performance. You know, David Gaudu was sensational. Sebastian Reichenbach was good. Stefan Kung was good. Don't forget the team time trial they rode was very strong. They obviously prepared really well for this tour. And I think if they, you know, reflect on it in a little while, there's a lot to be encouraged about.
Yeah, as a team, they were the revelation, I think, on this of this tour. They did right what all the other French team did wrong, you know, in terms of the recruiting, everything, to add Stefan Kung to the team. I mean, it worked right. Everything was really well prepared. They worked very well for Thibaut Pinot, except in the crosswinds. But finally, in spite of the emotion, well, within the team for Thibaut Pinot abandoning, the very, very good team performance. I wouldn't go as far as a six, because I mean, you know, mind you, Gaudu finished in the top 15. I mean, 5.5, I should say, is reasonable.
I think the biggest shame of the tour was not to be able to see whether Thibaut Pinot could challenge in the final few days, because we were denied that by a kind of freak injury. If the story of him banging his knee on the handlebars is the case, and we have no real reason to doubt that, especially having seen TV footage of him hobbling downstairs. And well, that's always frustrating. I'd much rather see a rider falter on the road and lose the tour that way, and at least have the consolation of knowing that was as far as their body could take them. But to suffer a withdrawal because of such bad luck, a real shame for Pinot and for the race, I think.
A little update on the race, Lionel. Not far to go, 5 kilometres or so.
Well, Greg Van Avermaet is up the road trying to net a stage win for CCC.
Score for Lotto, chaps.
Wow. Got to say, 7 out of 7 again.
Well, we should explain, we've just watched Caleb Ewan win the stage, coming from a long way back, and we happen to be standing outside the Lotto Soudal. Well, it's probably the best decision we've made all tour.
Yeah, well, absolutely. A hat trick for Ewan and 4th stage for Lotto Soudal, which put them on par with Mitchelton Scott and Jumbo Visma.
Yeah.
So, what a great tour for them. I mean, and we see bottles of beer, champagne cups around, and everybody's falling in everybody's arms. I mean, yeah, well, the end of the tour, exciting.
And 15 days in the King of the Mountain jersey for Tim Wellens. I mean, for a team that had nobody for the overall classification, that is about as good as it can get, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. They've had disappointing tours in recent years, so much needed and, well, very much enjoyed as well by them. We'll try and grab a word with someone, shall we? Saw you do your job there for Caleb, and he finished that off very well. Did you see, as you swung off, he was quite far back coming into the finish. Did that worry you at all?
No, not really. We can win, especially coming from behind. And yeah, indeed, I saw him probably going into the last corner, not in the top 5, top 3. He's like, first with, on the left-hand turn, he was still with Jasper in top 5, but then the right-hand turn, he's like, oh. And then I didn't saw him anymore. I was just listening to the speaker. But yeah, obviously, he was right again with the headwind. He could wait long. It's still a long way from the last corner. And he was on Groenewegen's wheel. So Groenewegen started left, he started right. And yeah, he was the fastest once again. So we knew it from the beginning that he's one of the fastest sprinters here. We just needed a few days to figure out how we do it. And then the last few chances, we took 100%.
And with 3 stage wins, he's the best sprinter at this year's tour.
He is. He doesn't have the jersey, but that's a different story about the point system. And it's the same with the climber. Probably, Tim is not the best climber, but he was aggressive for the jersey and went for it and took so many points and many stages. But anyway, it was not a goal to go for the green jersey here. We want to have 1 stage win. Now we come home with 4. So we are super, super, super happy.
And you joined the team with Caleb. I mean, this must be beyond your wildest dreams, is it?
Yeah, more or less. like I said, the goal was, and also the dream was to win with him a Grand Tour stage. So we succeeded already in the Giro, especially after missing out the last 2 years for me, the Giro and the Tour. And now doing both in 1 year and winning in both, coming home with 5 stage wins now in both Grand Tours. Unbelievable, super successful season, yeah.
Where are we now, Francois?
We're in a restaurant called Mollard. It's one of the great brasseries in Paris. It's in front of the Saint-Lazare station. And it's actually a real jewel. Like, remember when we were in Nancy, we were at the Excelsior Brasserie. And this brasserie is exactly the same period and the same style. It's in totally Art Nouveau style. And it's got a funny story because it was built in the late 19th century and by a famous architect at the time who designed many other monuments in France in the same period. And it fell out of favor in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. And in the late 70s, it had become a pizzeria. And all the decor had been covered in wood paints and painted, you know, white. And it was quite a, you know, downbeat place. And a guy, you know, purchased the restaurant and decided to you know, make a little bit of a renovation, and so he took away the wood paints and discovered the original decor behind it, which is as you can see, I love Art Nouveau, so I find it very there's an exotic kind of you know Arabic or Persian little aspect about it.
It's mosaic, isn't it? Mosaic tiling, very
gilt,
ornate.
Sort of could be a bit chintzy, but I like it. It's quite grand, and the waiters are all turned out in you know, white aprons with black waistcoats and bow ties. Lovely.
Well, Richard, very much like outside the team bus, our assessment of the teams outside the team buses has, well, it's kind of failed, hasn't it?
We've I give the restaurant 7 out of 7, however, just carry on the scoring. We have decamped, yeah, well, the race is done, so we didn't quite get our timing right, unlike Caleb Ewan. We did more of a Elia Viviani there, didn't we?
Went too early.
We went a bit too late. Went, I don't know. I didn't see the finish closely enough to know who went too late.
Well, Max Richese did the sprint for De Koenig Quickstep. Viviani was not the man.
I didn't know that. That's terrible.
Dylan Groenewegen was second and Richese's fourth. Bonifazio with third. And, Viviani was down in 18th place. So not the anointed
sprinter. We thought we were maybe going to have to go back and revise our ranking for Dimension Data, weren't we? Edvald Boasenhagen. Not the first time he's done that on the Champs-Élysées. He likes that finish. It goes early. But as we heard from Roger Kluge just there, it was a headwind finish. And that wouldn't have favoured him at all in that scenario.
So,
Total Direct Energy. Well, we just heard Bonifazio was third, probably their standout result of the tour, no?
Yeah, well, I mean, absolutely. I think Romain Sicard was in the breakaway once.
You're struggling here.
Nicky Terpstra was in a breakaway before he crashed out of the race. They're in contention with Dimension Data for the transparent, invisible jersey competition. I mean, I'm sorry to say, but because I've known their manager, Jean-René Bernardo, forever. He's a good friend of mine, and he's been, you know, a little bit like... 20 years ago, he had a little bit the same image as Jonathan Voters for French cycling, like kind of, you know, rejuvenated French cycling. And he managed, like JV, to find sponsors in difficult situations. And now he probably has his most solid sponsor ever. Well, the team did very, very poorly on this Tour de France. I don't know. I mean, the rating must be... What, two?
Well, no, one. I mean, Ryan Taramay was 66 overall. Bonifazio's result today was the best result they've had through the tour. I mean, they were in some of the breaks, but...
Lilian Calmejean, for me, is the big disappointment. He was one of the great hopes of French cycling a couple of years ago, won a stage at Vuelta, didn't he?
I mean, not for want of trying. He was active, he tried things on various different days, but really had nothing.
Anyway, we shouldn't linger too long on Total Direct Energy, or we're going to run into the same problems as before, and our main course is going to arrive when we've only... what's the next team?
Well, Arkea Samsic.
Well, did you not try? Did you? Have you not got an interview with Andre Greipel? Lionel, you went off to get an interview with Andre Greipel.
Yeah, I did. Outside the team bus has completely failed. But, you know, I took it day by day.
The wheels have come off the team bus.
I did my best. And unfortunately, it came up short. I think four teams got missed on outside the team bus. Total Direct Energy was one. Arkea Samsic was another. Team Ineos and Movistar. Disappointing. But, you know, I've got to leave somewhere to go next year. If we ever, we're not doing this. We're not doing outside the team bus again next year.
Oh yeah.
Year, are we?
Oh,
no, yeah, yeah. Anyway. Next year, I mean, new challenge. You're doing inside the team bus.
Well, Doraemon Poulidor has beaten me to that already. He's been photographed inside the Groupama FDJ bus
in Thibaut Pinot's seat. So Arkea Samsic, quickly.
So very quickly, a good tour, I think. Really, Warren Barguil did okay. Finished in the top 10, clawed his way into the top 10 at the end, was active in a few breaks. Greipel was sixth on the Champs-Élysées, obviously had had two very good afternoon/evenings on the Champs-Élysées in the past when he's won the stage. And this evening I was hoping to have a word with Greipel, and I was outside the bus and watched as he walked across, through snaked through the buses to the Lotto Soudal bus, where he went and congratulated his old team staff and Mark Sargent, the team boss. And it was a really moving scene, really, that he'd taken the time to go and do that. And then when I asked if he wanted to talk to me for outside the team bus, he said no interviews.
On that, I saw Caleb Ewan do the same thing the other day with Mitchelton Scott, his old team, and we had thought or been led to believe that there was a bit of bad blood there, because he was obviously very disappointed last year not to go to the tour. But there were very warm embraces between Caleb Ewan and the team staff there the other day. So a score for Arkea Samsic.
I would say a solid 4, really, given the current kind of level of riders they have. They've done okay.
Next team?
Before we have our main courses, the next team, Bahrain Merida.
Quickly, two stage wins, Dylan Teuns and Vincenzo Nibali. And I think given that Nibali came here for stage wins, that's a decent return for them, a decent race. You know, a lot when you consider the teams that are going home without anything. Dylan Teuns won at La Planche des Belles Filles, one of the great stages, and Nibali won on the last stage in the Alps. So two kind of showpiece stages, and I think that certainly ensures them a solid 4.
Yeah, without Rohan Dennis, let's forget.
Oh yeah,
hang on. It's got to be more than Arkea Samsic. Or do the points, are they kind of rated according
to
resources?
Expectations and resources.
Maybe expectations as well.
Fine.
The cycling podcast at the 2019 Tour de France is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for supporting the cycling podcast. You can get 25% off. I can see you're warming up here, Lionel. You're warming up for this. All your Science in Sport products at the website scienceandsport.com. With the code, somebody actually asked for Francois to do it, but I bet Francois doesn't remember it. But you can do it in your robot voice, Lionel.
SISCP25.
Somebody wants to hear it in your...
In Francois' accent.
In French.
I can do it in French.
It won't work in French. Note to listeners.
Donc c'est SISCP215.
It will work in France, obviously. That was a bit stupid of me.
But only
just initials.
Only
he's not translating the code.
True. I was going to do it in a cowboy voice.
Okay, go for it.
SIS25.
Oh dear.
What is it?
SISCP21.
SISCP25.
Lionel's first American accent since the sad demise of US Marketing Guy.
Oh, come on.
The much lamented.
I wasn't anything to do with US Marketing Guy. He was a real person.
Yep.
Anyway,
thank you, Science and Sport, for supporting the cycling podcast. We truly appreciate it. And remember, you can win a day in the Team Ineos car, thanks to Science and Sport, at the Vuelta or the Tour of Britain. Go to scienceandsport.com/signup to enter a wonderful competition with some great prizes. Lionel.
Well, this final stage on the Champs-Élysées, where all the buses are parked just off the Place de la Concorde, That's right, isn't it? That's where we were, wasn't it? Yeah, get disorientated. Anyway, you see these little moments, don't you? Like Greipel going over to see his ex-colleagues at Lotto Soudal. I was outside the Team Ineos bus hoping to capture someone for outside the team bus, but they were preoccupied celebrating winning the Tour de France. I mean, how unreasonable.
Eating pizza, most of
they
them.
Were. Well, the pizzas were delivered by the Dutch TV crew who made over Magnus Cort's room.
Ah, right.
And they delivered a big pile, box of Domino's pizzas to Dylan Van Baarle, and he distributed them around the team. Luke Rowe was there wearing ordinary clothing. I did wonder whether he was going to do a sort of John Terry celebration and put on some Team Ineos cycling kit.
They've got history in that because Gianni Moscon came back to Paris last year to join the party.
Well, they're perfectly entitled to do so. Jim Ratcliffe was there as well, the boss of Ineos Company, struck by just how tall he is, a very tall man. And Dave Brailsford was wearing a Columbia football shirt, which I gather, although I haven't verified this, I gather was given to him by a fan in exchange for a Team Ineos jersey. But yeah, Brailsford was wearing a Columbia football shirt, which of course is a vivid yellow. Just like Watford, really.
Well, actually, the only person missing, and you know, Nicolas Portal was pointing it out, was Chris Froome. Nicolas Portal was sporting a T-shirt full of signatures. I tried to ask him what it was about, but I couldn't quite get it. But never mind. There was a celebration spirit all around, and you know, and Portal, as usual, and I think everybody would have said the same within the team. Was sorry that Chris Froome couldn't be part of the party in one. So they sent him texts and you know, selfies and everything. And well, so because I've named him twice, you know, I talked to Nicolas Portal at the finish, and yeah, it was his seventh. You know, actually amazing. He said, well, like they've raised him as the team director. With a seventh Tour de France win, which puts him on par, or just above, actually, Cyril Guimard, who's, you know, Nicolas Portal now has won the Tour with how many different riders?
Four riders.
Whereas Guimard has only won the Tour with three different riders, if I get it right. So, yeah, this is what he had to say.
Nicolas? Where is Nicolas? Francois, we were supposed to hear Nicolas Portal at this point.
Last day of the tour, and I'd been very careful to you know, when recording, DSs and riders, that, you know, my little recorder is running, and unfortunately, for once, and it happens on the last, it's like, you know, I kind of crashed on the last day. Well, I did not record what Nicolas Portal was telling me, which is a big shame, and especially as I didn't listen to what he was saying. Like, that was no, it's not true. Of course, I was listening to what he was saying. It's a pity because he was very interesting, quite moving. I asked him, you know, whether he was blasé after, you know, winning seven Tour de France with four different riders, and he said no, because it's always different. The personalities are not the same. The way we did it was different. So it's every time a new emotion, and. You again insisted on the fact that this time they were maybe even more proud of winning the Tour with Egan Bernal, because they were not, as he said, fixed tactics. They kind of adapted to the circumstances, and until the very last minute, they didn't really know how they would you know, impose Egan Bernal's obvious domination, and they were so relieved and you know, happy that they made it, you know. And that there was a crucial moment. There was the Iseran, because that's by climbing the Iseran that Bernal actually earned the minutes and seconds that made him Tour de France winner. And it was planned to attack on the Iseran, which is a good thing, because if they attacked on the next climb in Tignes, well, it would have been too late. There never was such an attack, and and Portal really explained that the moves that they, the various moves that they did on his round that we saw with the various riders, Wout Poels, Dylan van Baarle, and you know, even on the flat, the way that they tackled the climb and you know, and these successive kind of attacks to try and test their opponents, and then when Egan went, he said was all planned, and he said, like we all saw that he told me, I mean, that day Egan Bernal was on another planet. That was his words, you know. He was really riding at a level above the rest. It was so surreal that, you know, actually the, you know, the lightning and storm, you know, took the rest over, and to signal the you know, the birth of a new champion. And so he said, yeah, that was very important, and insisted on the fact that everybody around him, I mean, there was in other teams, other riders, everybody respected Egan Bernal. There was no hostility like in the past. It was all, you know, all very. The whole tour caravan, family, journalists, weavers, everybody, you know, really respected Bernal for what he did. And it was a little bit of a change as well, you know, given the hostility Team Ineos had been subjected to in the past. And finally, I told him, well, what next? You know, when is it going to stop? And he said, well, of course, you know, one day it's going to stop. I mean, we're not going to win the tour forever. And he said, and we know that, and that's precisely the reason why we relish these victories. And each one, you know, takes us closer to the end. So in a way, instead of being blasé, he said, well, we kind of enjoy them even more. Because we know that, you know, and that's what makes the sport so exciting. Somebody else will come, will you know, kind of fade a little bit, and others will come. And for the time being, you know, let's enjoy what we're achieving.
So, Richard, on with the end of term report, Borat Hansgrohe for you.
Well, we're probably guilty of not giving enough credit to Peter Sagan. We're so used to him winning the green jersey that we don't really talk about it. We almost don't notice that he's won yet again. Seventh year for Peter Sagan in the green jersey. It was interesting, Roger Kluger said that, you know, sort of hinted that they felt that Caleb Ewan is the best sprinter in the race, as his three stage wins kind of proved. Wasn't really in the running for the green jersey, and he queried the sort of scoring system. But Sagan, you know, however they tweak the scoring system, Sagan has made it his own. Emmanuel Buchmann as well. I mean, they're in a similar situation to Jumbo Visma in that they're fighting on two different fronts, with Sagan and Emmanuel Buchmann, who finished fourth in the end. And that's a splendid performance from him. Gregor Mühlberger was excellent for them. Patrick Conrad, maybe not as good as we expected. He's shown flashes of great form in the past, but overall, you know, a strong team performance. They had guys supporting Sagan, not that he needs much support, and they had a strong team supporting Buchmann. And you know, whether they carry on trying to do the two things, I mean, who knows? But I give Bora Hansgrohe a very solid six.
I mean, you can't win the green jersey and a stage and finish fourth overall six. without getting a six in our newly invented, newly minted scoring
invented
system
by Magnus Cort.
Yeah, because once in the history books, as you said, the man who spent the most time in a distinctive jersey on the Tour de France, and so who spent the most time in the mixed zone talking to us journalists, is by far Peter Sagan.
I mean, I wonder, as a sort of piece of performance art poetry, whether every word that Peter Sagan has ever uttered in the mix zone could be kind of set to music. It would be surreal, wouldn't it?
Oh, it's only three words.
You probably need to be, I don't know, Roger Waters from Pink Floyd would have to write the music to go with it. I don't know.
This is not one of your better ideas, Lionel, you know.
I think it's a great
idea. It's not
idea.
Up there with Outside the Team Bus.
Francois, Outside the Team Bus bullying continues. I failed. I'm willing to accept
that. There's next year. You can finish it off next year.
As you said on the way here, I could complete the set at the Vuelta, except Total Direct Energy and RKS Amsic, I don't think, are riding. But anyway.
Total Direct Energy, I don't know. Maybe you're right.
They have done in the past, but done in the past, can't remember.
Yeah. Francois, De Koenig Quickstep, did they have a... all right, weren't
decent.
They?
Well, you know, I said about Team Ineos 7 out of 8, what to say about... the Koenig Quickstep 14 out of 7 14 because they kept the yellow jersey for 14 days with Julien Alaphilippe. Egan Bernal is the undisputed winner of this Tour de France. We kind of knew it before it started. He's the up and coming talent. He's got it all. We're not going to get back to it, you know, no flaws yet. But as Geraint Thomas put it, this tour was exceptional because of Julien Alaphilippe. That's the reason why we didn't talk about Peter Sagan that much, because he's been kind of overshadowed by an even more exuberant talent than they're in the same race in the same category. You know, they can win classics, they can climb pretty well. Sagan has never been outstanding in time trials, but and they have this once again outgoing character. And well, let's face it, you know, Julien Alaphilippe, and I think everybody would admit it, stole the show. So if you add to that Elia Viviani winning the stage, a couple of other good performances as a team. I mean, Casper Asgreen was exceptional. We all love Yves Lampaert as the perfect teammate. I'm sure I'm forgetting Henrik Maas. It didn't quite confirm, his second place in the world last year. But I mean, what a solid team. So I'll give them I would really give them a 6. And if I could add, the artistic impression, I would even add a point there. So it's near perfect.
A little postscript to that. Alaphilippe said at the finish today that he's going to be more preoccupied next year with trying to win the Tour of Flanders than the Tour de France. So kind of confirms what Yves Lampaert said last night, that he expects him to not base his season around trying to win the Tour de France.
Next up, CCC. The standout rider is Greg Van Avermaet, of course, and on the opening road stage, he went in the break. He won the King of the Mountains points on the Mur and wore the King of the Mountains jersey for a couple of days. Finished very well, actually, Van Avermaet. 36 overall for a non-GC rider. That's a really good performance, because he could perfectly legitimately just sit up and ride in with a gruppetto every day, but he chooses not to do that. That's actually quite interesting that, he could save a bit of powder to go in the breakaways. The other big story from CCC was Alessandro De Marchi got into the break that Thomas De Gendt was in, and De Gendt really rode him off his wheel on run into Saint-Étienne very impressively, and then De Marchi suffered a really terrible crash the following day and had to quit the race. Other than that, a fairly quiet
tour. Simon Geschke, I think, is worth a mention, because he had broke his collarbone early in the season and I thought rode really well.
Yeah, he got in the break in the Pyrenees, didn't he, and was kind of no match for Simon Yates on the final climb that day. Not that you would expect him to be. But a quietish tour for the rest of the CCC team. And you do wonder, this is very much a transitional year after the kind of saving of the team and transitioning from BMC to CCC. It's not as easy as ABC doing that.
Score, please, Lionel.
Given the resources they had at their disposal, I think a solid 3.5, which is 50%.
And here we are on the Champs-Élysées, and guess who's the first person I meet in the most beautiful avenue in the world? Well, at least that's what they say. No other but Ciro, our old friend. So Ciro, we hardly saw you on the tour. Where were you?
Yes, it's true, but dear listeners, the best arrives a lot of times at the finish. So also in this case, for the last stage, the best, me.
I suppose for the best for you starts tomorrow. That's looking for the perfect beach.
Yeah, unfortunately not immediately, dear listeners, but I have a lot of beaches in my plans in August. Italian beaches. I mean, after having seen beautiful Greek beaches in June, August is the time for Italian beaches. Mm.
So do you have a little advice to give to our listeners? To where do we find the best beaches in Italy?
My bet, north of Sardinia, the... in Italy, we call Arcipelago della Maddalena. Mm. The closest airport is Olbia. There is the island of Caprera, Maddalena. Listeners, it's really breathtaking. Mm. A lot more than this Tour de France, dear Francois. Okay, yeah, well, we're talking about...
We're not talking about the Tour de France anymore. It's finished.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of reports. Yes, it has been really a good edition with a lot of imprevedibility, attacks...
And a stage victory by Vincenzo Nibali.
But yes, yes. I mean, the almost in the last moment. I mean, for him the tour has been very difficult. After the second place in the Giro, for Vincenzo to do the double in the same year has been always difficult. Normally when he does Giro and Vuelta, it's better. But in any case, with this stage victory, in my opinion, I mean, he saved a little bit his tour.
Oh, it was wonderful to hear from Ciro Scognamiglio there. Francois, you bumped into him. We've been sort of meaning to get him on the podcast and haven't managed it all tour. I don't know what he's been doing. What has he been doing?
I don't know. I mean, he's probably been, as usual, running after Vincenzo Nibali, but why?
I know why.
Yeah. Well, yesterday he wanted to catch.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's the thing. You know, he was waiting for Nibali like some other guys are waiting for Gaudu. and he delivered that at the last. Maybe if Nibali had won, you know, the first stage, then we would have seen Ciro a little bit more. But yeah, well.
Well, one of the disappointments of a very good tour with very few disappointments that, I mean, I saw a lot of Ciro, but we just couldn't seem to. Well, it's been difficult getting him on the podcast because we've been. We tended to record away from the press centre, but wonderful to hear from him, and he's in great form. Just before we carry on with our roundup of the teams, a quick reminder that we are doing a tour of, a grand tour, no less, in November. We are doing shows in Cardiff at St David's Hall on Tuesday the 12th of November, Belfast MAC on Friday the 15th of November, the Arts Theatre in London, two nights, 18th and 25th of November. The Leicester Y Theatre on Thursday, the 28th of November. Manchester Royal Northern College of Music on Saturday, the 30th of November. And there are more dates to be confirmed very soon. We're also doing an event in Harrogate at the World Championships on the Friday evening before the men's and women's road races. And that'll be the biggest event we've ever done. Francois will be there. Lionel, you'll be there. Daniel Freeb will be there. And others will be there too. We'll have other special guests on the night. So for all tickets to all of those events, go to thecyclingpodcast.com and click on the tab down the side that says live events. Go there to buy your tickets. Oh, there's a few glasses being collected behind me by the sounds of things. Let's carry on with the teams.
Richard, Jumbo-Visma.
Jumbo-Visma, well... I spoke to Laurens De Ploes at the finish because he has been very impressive, having had to pull out the Giro. He came to the Tour and rode very strongly indeed in the mountains, along with George Bennett, in support of Stephen Kruijswijk, who finished on the podium for the first time in his career. Here's what Laurens De Ploes said at the finish.
But you started the Tour very strongly and finished it very strongly as well. You must be very pleased.
Yeah, first of all, thank you. It was a unique Tour for us, I think. Very special. We started with the yellow and... We didn't have the yellow in the end, but it was like a yellow dream all the tour. Everything was perfect. We never make big mistakes, and Stevie was on the podium. For him, it was 10 years of hard work, and now he's finally on the podium.
And you were very strong yesterday and really instrumental in winning him that place on the podium. What do you look back on over the 3 weeks with the most satisfaction? You won the team time trial as well, but what do you look back on with the most satisfaction?
Yeah, Stevie is on the podium. Just was three incredible weeks, and every day we had a goal. We had we had a sprint chance, or we had a chance with Stevie. So it was was super fast this Tour de France, and now I want to enjoy it. It was the first time for me on the Champs-Élysées, and it was a goosebumps from the beginning.
You joined this team from a very successful team. I mean, what is this team doing right? Because a lot of people are looking at this team as a team that's made massive improvements.
We just do a great job in training, nutrition, and I think these are the best parts of the most important things in cycling. And I just also when you're on the flow, it's easy to keep going, I think. And now we have just a super successful year, and I hope it continues.
Well, Jumbo Visma, very impressive. The one disappointment for them will be that Dylan Groenewegen, who most of us, I think, expected to be the best sprinter in the race, only won one stage. But from day one, when Mike Tournison won after Groenewegen crashed, day two, they won the team time trial, they won a stage with Van Aert, and they've put a man on the podium, and it's the first time they've done that. And we've certainly, in Jumbo-Visma, formerly Yellow Lotto, seen a team that's made big strides. And you know, they're going to go to the Vuelta with a very, very strong team and a good chance of winning that race, I think. And for Kruijswijk to finish on the podium, I think, is a fantastic result for him, and he'll be very, very happy with that. I would give Jumbo-Visma 6.5. I'm close to 7. Yeah, 7, I think, for Jumbo-Visma.
Yeah, just with quick one, had not Wout van Aert crashed, maybe Groenewegen's sprints towards the end of the tour would have been better.
Katusha, well, what can you say about Katusha? They're struggling, aren't they, really? I mean, Ilnur Zakarin got through the Giro and was their best finisher overall in, let me just scroll down here in real time, 51st place.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we expect a bit better than that. He did get in a couple of breaks, notably on Saturday. They didn't really threaten to win a stage. Very difficult tour for them, especially with the news breaking that they're... That my cheese has arrived. Especially the news breaking that the future of the team is uncertain. Sorry, I didn't want to give the impression there that my cheese arriving is more important than the futures of possibly 150 people working within a professional cycling team. But Katusha have punched above their weight in a few Grand Tours in the last few years, but very much making up the numbers a bit here.
Just before we carry on with our analysis of the team's performances, let's hear from somebody whose team we did talk about earlier, Mike Woods of EF Education First. I spoke to him at the finish. Always enjoy speaking to Mike Woods. He's a sort of very endearing fella, riding his first Tour de France. He's not that young. He's in his 30s now. And you just get the impression that he's thoroughly enjoyed the experience of riding the Tour. And he's finished despite crashing and breaking a couple of ribs. So here's what he said at the finish.
Finished your first Tour de France.
Yeah, man.
How does it feel?
Surreal. I'm still processing right now. I can't believe I was just on Champs-Élysées, just looking at the Arc de Triomphe as the sun was setting, and around hundreds of thousands of people celebrating what we all finished.
Was that, yeah, I mean, did that live up to any expectations you had of it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you could expect more. That's like a high point in a lifetime, what just happened.
And you rode a good tour. I mean, you had a bad luck. You've been racing with a couple of broken ribs, but we saw you up the road an awful lot. You must be pleased with how you performed in the circumstances.
Yeah, given the circumstances, I think I did the best possible race I could have. The ribs were sore today on the cobbles, but they didn't inhibit. I mean... I think maybe I could have accomplished a bit more if they hadn't been broken, but I'm still proud that I went for it and I didn't let them hold me back. I felt like, yeah, like I said, I raced the best race I could have.
Most riders finish the tour and say they'll never be back, but do you want to come back?
Oh yeah, this is the coolest thing I've done, period, in my life.
And what's next for you?
San Sebastian. I got the email a few days ago about the room list. Feels so weird to get a rooming list when you're at the Tour de France for another race. But I'll be racing in 5 days from now, pretty much.
Will we see you at the Vuelta?
No Vuelta on tap this year. Hoping to do Montreal and Quebec, basically my home race.
World Championships?
Definitely World Championships, yeah.
Great, we'll see you there.
Our friend Kaylee Fretz put on Twitter today that Mike Woods would become the first person who's run a 4-minute mile and finished the Tour de France.
Yeah, but that's probably true.
Probably true, but no, but there's how? Where do we verify this?
I mean, Francois, you went pretty close to 4 minute mile, did you not, in your running career? And you finished several Tours de France.
Yeah, but no. I was under 4 minutes on the 1500, but which doesn't mean I could have, you know, there's still a hundred and so meters to for the mile. So no, I wouldn't have run the mile.
And
so I must describe what's happening.
Sorry. Richard has ordered a flaming meringue.
That's right.
The waiter very discreetly gave me instructions to blow it out, and
you've got enough puff. You can't run a 4 minute mile with lungs that small.
Let alone finishing the Tour.
Slightly embarrassing that.
But he's extinguished your flambé.
Burn off too much of the Grand Marnier there, but anyway, let's carry on with the. Have we heard from Mike Woods yet? I can't remember.
We heard from Mike Woods.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Come on.
Next team, Movistar.
Well, Movistar. We're in the car, and Lionel pointed out the fact that, you know, having the three, it's funny because Team Ineos have, you know, two leaders, and other teams, Jumbo Visma have a number of figures in the team, and Movistar always seem to have it wrong. And well, Lionel being Lionel, he made a comparison with food and said it was like jam, tuna and sausage, you know, to trying to
a jam, tuna and sausage sandwich. But we had quite a debate about what ingredients
I'm sure. Well, jam, tuna and sausage could be all right. I mean, in a way, it depends on the jam. It's always easy to dismiss Movistar as because the expectations are so high. But when you look at the team performance, there are three guys in the top 10. Landa being sixth, Quintana eighth, Valverde ninth. Quintana winning a stage, and it's strange. Look at Alejandro Valverde, the old man of the peloton, almost, because last back was a little bit older. But what did he do in this Tour de France? We kind of never saw him, and he was always there.
He rode brilliantly at La Planche de Belfie, doing what I don't know.
Well,
but it was
exactly
brilliant.
He rode brilliantly well, you know, upstaging his teammate Landa in the last man stage as well. So as you say, I mean. Sometimes it's good in cuisine to mix conflicting flavors, but in this case, well, maybe they got what they wanted. They top the team classifications, three men in the top 10. The stage victory for Quintana was apparently leaving at the end of the season.
As is Landa.
Landa.
And I think that's the problem, really.
Yeah, and Carapaz. What to say?
Is Landa going to Bahrain Merida?
Apparently.
And Quintana going to RKS Samsic?
Apparently.
And Valverde's nearly 40.
So, Valverde, to finish in the top 10 at 39 is extraordinary.
It's amazing. I mean,
and
especially
when he was riding in support of the others, and he made that very clear.
Well, did he ride in support of the others? It's difficult to know.
I think he did. But, yeah, I mean, they won the team classification. A few people point out that, I think the other day you said that team classification was calculated on overall position.
No. It's calculated on the first three riders in each stage, cumulative time added together, and then added up across the whole Tour. Which is why I think Trek Segafredo took over for a day or so.
But it's ironic that they won the team classification having not really ridden as a team. That's
absolutely
a flaw in
how do you quantify, you know, team spirits? I mean,
well, we should say they obviously rode fantastic well at the Giro. They won that with Richard Carapaz. Mikel Landa was up there as well. These guys are all fantastic, talented riders, but they don't seem to ride in a kind of coherent way at all. And
true, but once again, you know, three guys in the top 10, one stage win. Even if I wanted to be very severe with them, it's a six.
Oh. Given the
how many teams? How many teams have top three guys in the top 10?
Yeah, six.
Well, none.
How many teams won a stage? Only eight, I think, teams won a stage.
I mean, we're in danger here. It's 11:20 on
five
the final
and a half.
Nine of the Tour.
Yeah,
but Sean Kelly always says about a sprint finish: if you've got two sprinters and they finish fourth and fifth, you've failed. And I think the problem is with the GC is that if you finish three guys in the bottom half of the top 10. The problem is not one of them was quite good enough to be in the top half of the top 10. And so therefore, sorting out the pecking order is very different, difficult.
Okay, so what's your rating?
5.5.
5.25.
Next team?
Trek Segafredo. Who wants to take Trek Segafredo?
Well, Richie Porte was disappointing, ultimately. But Giulio Ciccone wore the yellow jersey and confirmed that he is a great talent. So I think, in the end, probably 3.5 for Trek Segafredo.
Oh, I think if a team has the yellow jersey for 2 days, you've got to bump four. That up to four. Porte, probably expensive to finish 11th, I would say.
Yes.
So, and would have been nailed on for the Alla Zubeldia prize had he clung on to the top 10. But to go for the Alla Zubeldia jersey and still not make the top 10, yeah, lose a point for that.
Quick mention for Jasper Stuyven, the guy they don't know how to use. Great talent. He sprinted in the bunch sprints. What the hell, you know? I hope for him he finds another team and another role at the end of the season.
Oh, they've just lost half a point.
What should
back
he be
to
doing?
3.5.
What should he be doing?
Well,
going in those breaks like Thomas De Gendt?
No, I think he has the talent to win a major classic one of these days.
Not even the Tour de France, really.
Oh no! I mean, he's not a sprinter. He's not a climber. He's not a GC rider. But I think he has a good chance to win a good classic in the future. So, yeah, probably misguided in his Tour de France quest.
Next team, Lionel.
UAE Team Emirates. I'll take this one. So Fabio Aru, 14th in the Tour, without really even being on the television. Quite impressive. We know he's been coming back from his the problem with his veins,
iliac artery, isn't it?
Basically, his problem with his veins. Dan Martin, 18th, real disappointment. I thought he would really fancy this tour route with the kind of tricky stages, the fact that it was a racer's race, La Planche des Belles Filles. I just thought he would do better than that, but 18th, and he lost a lot of time on some key days and was really never in contention, was always at the back of whatever group, you know, whether he was up the road, he seemed to be at the back of that group, or if he was in the GC group, he was sort of the back of that. Alexander Kristoff knocking on a bit now. Of course, won on the Champs-Élysées a year ago and really saved his and his team's tour then. Best place for him, second place early in the race. Again, given the... Well, we don't know, do we? It's unusual, this, because, I mean, obviously, with the money you would think would be available from the Emirates, you would think that this would be an absolute powerhouse team. But it feels like a slightly dysfunctional outfit, maybe a sort of maybe hangover.
They start the season very well, and they're missing Fernando Gaviria a lot, you know, who would be here, I'm sure, winning a stage or stages, and I think they miss him. They've been unlucky with Aru.
The most impressive rider, the young Alexander Kristoff Lidl man,
Jasper Philipsen, who didn't finish but showed enough, I think, suggests he's a great talent. Next team.
Last team, Wanty Groupe Gobert, François.
It's for me. Well, Wanty Groupe Gobert. Let's face it. I mean, they were among the invited teams, in the wild card teams. The other being the usual French suspects, Arkea Samsic, who saved that tour thanks to Warren Barguil, 10th place, and Total Direct Energy, who didn't do anything. They showed they deserve to be invited. They were actors. I mean, they had guys in the break. So, well, usual suspect, Johan Ofredo, who's doing every year on the tour. Now we know that he's doing the Johan Ofredo show. So, you know, I'm crying. I'm in the breaks, and the others are so bad with me that they don't cooperate, and I struggle to finish, and it's so great to finish. I mean, he's got the looks. He's got the so. Well, it could be Alaphilippe if he had the right, you know, the the sheer riding talent that Alaphilippe has. But
and was 10 years younger.
And was 10 years younger. But then they were, you know, they'd go up there like, well, what's his name?
Zandro Maurice.
No, well, I was coming to the, but in the breakaway, there's always, you know, Beckhardt. I mean, these guys, they've always got guys going in the breaks. And well, we mentioned him, and we actually interviewed him twice during this Tour de France. Xandro Maurice, who was one of the revelation. I mean, he's not a young rider, but he found himself, you know, in with several top ten. As he said, when we talked to him many times, he's good everywhere, not excellent anywhere, and well, he managed a very good GC position in finally, I think he finished 21st, and well, which is so overall, if you see, if we, you know, base our rating on what was expected of Juan Thiergaubert, a very good tour for them, and I should think 4.5 at
they're
least.
They're gutsy and they're very visible, aren't they? Well, we see a lot of them
at any point through the whole race. All eight of their riders were in a break of some sort. And they've got the smallest budget by far, €6 million apparently. And, well, I mean, it's like a kind of non-league team getting through to the fifth round of the FA Cup. You don't expect them to do much, but one day. And I think they, you know, they've got a very talented young middle-aged rider now in Tour de France terms, Guillaume Martin.
The
frustration.
12th.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he's going to Cofidis, apparently.
Yeah. Well, maybe that will be good for him, you know, to move on and perhaps. Yeah, I mean, he's clearly talented. You were tipping him, Richard, to win on La Planche des Belles Filles. And, well, you can't argue with that. I mean, he obviously.
Well, you can't, he didn't do that.
Well, but, he didn't do that.
But he's a talented rider, no doubt.
Yeah.
We finished our roundup, chaps. And, well, we should reflect a little bit. Again, before we go, on what's been a great tour. Daniel Freeb, in his annual wine glass rating, has given it 4, I notice.
Tough man, though,
he's
isn't he,
very
Daniel?
Difficult. He's a very tough difficult man. I mean, he's given 2003 5 stars. I would give this year 5 stars, I think.
Maybe he's deducted 1 wine glass for the last couple of days in the Alps. I mean, that was a real disappointment. We wanted to see the race played out over the original course. I think that Friday stage was a compromise of the most.
But yet, that's a stage that we will talk about forever. And we've already been talking ourselves about. We were having a drink with Seb Piquet last night, who was in the car, who had to make the call. It wasn't his decision, but he had to announce to the teams what was happening. The sheer drama of that day, it made it one of the
stages. In terms of excitement, and historically, this stage will remain as a great moment of Tour de France, like we said last night, like Chris Froome running for his bike on the Ventoux. So,
as I say, water cooler TV moment, wasn't it? It was.
Do they say that?
Well, they do about TV, or they used to when
water cooler moment.
TV.
It's something you talk about at the water cooler.
Exactly. Yeah. In your office after the night after.
Yeah.
Or so the day after, sorry.
The only reason I can see why Daniel put 5 star to 2003 and 4 for this one is that, yes, Daniel, the quality of the cappuccino has not improved in France, but why drink cappuccino in France?
Yeah, come on, Daniel. We drink wine, don't we? Anyway, let's cheers. Let's cheers. A great tour.
Cheers. Of the 17 tours I've done in some form or other, this has been the most enjoyable by a distance, really, for a lot of reasons. The racing was fantastic every day.
The company.
Hmm?
The company's been really good.
Oh, no, obviously the company, yep. I was getting to that. Really, I can only remember one dull day. The day that Dylan Groenewegen won at the end of the first week was quite soporific.
Chalon-sur-Saône. Not bad.
Oh. We drove past it today.
And I would say...
What would you say? What would you say, Lionel?
What was that?
You just dried up.
I dried
it's
up.
It's the end of the tour. Lionel's dried up. Lionel's
but,
end...
also a tear has kind of welled in my eye.
Oh my
but
goodness.
It's over. It's kind of surreal, isn't it? And...
We've got some thank yous.
Enjoyed every minute.
And not just to friends of the podcast, though. We do want to say thank you to some recent friends of the podcast. One of them We've got some thank yous to get through in a moment, haven't we, Lionel? But a thank you to, oh my goodness, Melissa Studenroth Schultz. I hope that's correct. Melissa Schultz, perhaps. Thank you to you. Thank you also to Paul Dean, Andreas Jorgensen, Rasmus Hansen, James Little, Stephen Timms, Juan Masters, David Phillips, Glenn Stegink, and Johan Bjorklund.
Thank you to Daniel Gay, Ben Jones, Paul Hyam, Lee Everson, John Hassel, John Cowie, Annette Mont, Andrew Geller, and Charlie Billington.
And un grand merci à Jack Passoupierre, Christophe Walters, Christian Prebenson, Anthony Nicholas Moss, Barbara Skinner, Jeffrey Harding, Tunes to Tube, Ian Tompkins, Timothy Mine. Tunes to Tube.
Tunes to Tube. I'm not sure who you are. But these are all people who have signed up as friends of the podcast. Very grateful. You can sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com. Lots of special episodes there, including one on Jumbo Visma, who've been one of the teams of the tour and how they were working towards this. We'll have more episodes coming soon, but we've got other thank yous as well.
Yes, we can't get the show on the road without our brilliant production team and the producers who turn around every episode every night and Kilometre Zero every night for the following morning, often under quite tight time pressures because we're recording out here in France quite late in the evening sometimes, and we want to get the episodes online as quickly as we can, and they do a fantastic job for us. Thank you very much to Adam Bowie, Will Jones, John Mooney, Jonathan Rowe and Tom Wally. A big thanks, additional thanks to Jonathan Rowe for running our entire social media operation and just generally keeping...
Managing the Friends of the Podcast program
and generally kind of sending morale-boosting messages on WhatsApp.
I don't know what we do with that, Jonathan. Jonathan, don't go.
Is he joining Cofidis next year?
I think he's joining. He's got an offer from Lance Armstrong.
Oh, wow. I mean, we can't stand in his way.
We can.
A big thank you to Simon Gill, who came out for a few disastrous days in the Alps. I mean, the whole tour unraveled in the Alps when Simon arrived.
I know. I mean, I'm sure that was a coincidence.
I don't hold him responsible. It purely coincidental.
Just a coincidence.
Purely coincidental. A big thank you to our sponsors, of course, who... Well, they enable us to cover the Tour de France and the other races and produce all the episodes and develop the spin-off shows that we've done. So a huge thank you to everyone at RAFA, Science in Sport, Hans Grohe, who sponsored Kilometre Zero, and the regular sponsors of each episode, particularly Watt Bike and The Economist and Harry's Razors. A big thank you to David Luxton, Rebecca Winfield and Nick Walters of David Luxton Associates.
And then can I add a big thank you to Richard Moore and Lionel Burnley for having me on the cycling podcast for the Tour de France. I'm not guaranteeing that I'll still be alive for next year's Tour
de France.
But if
you are alive,
but if I'm alive, I might consider the offer.
Oh, the inevitable offer. Well, Francois, I think last year we did say to you, please, next year, and you're here. You have to keep coming until there's a French winner. So thank goodness there wasn't a French winner this year.
Yeah, I thought I would retire on the Sardinian beach with Ciro or something. But
No, you're not going anywhere. You're just getting started, Francois.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Francois, as ever. And my education has continued. We were talking a little bit about French cuisine while we were having our really quite... very pleasant meal here in a Parisian brasserie, and often in Paris you can stumble into the wrong place quite easily, can't you? And feel like you've been ripped off and given quite inadequate food. And I think one of the eye-opening things for me is that Francois just knows the rules of French restaurants and French cuisine, what you should go for, what you should avoid. We've eaten local as much as we can. We've tried to go to the places that the local people go to or on the Tour de France, wherever ASO go, that's always good. Mm-hmm. But the being our guide around France has been absolutely invaluable, and it's added so much to my own experience of the Tour de France to have you in your nest at the back of the car again, Francois. And so I hope you'll be with us again in 2020. And I hope you'll be with us again in 2021 to tell us all about Copenhagen.
Absolutely. Bring on Copenhagen. But just a couple of more thank yous. Thank you to Skoda, who support our coverage of women's cycling through their sponsorship of the Cycling Podcast Femina. They've given us a lovely a car to travel around France in, which has been wonderful. And, you know, well done, Skoda, for their support of women's cycling in particular. And the next episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina will be coming very soon. So thanks to Skoda. Thanks also to Austin Cycles, who lent me a carbon folding bike, the Atto, which we will be giving to a listener. We'll announce the winner of the Austin Cycles Atto in our press conference episode, which will come out later this week.
And a big thank you to Stacey Snyder for her Tour de France
mugs. Oh my goodness, how could we forget Stacey?
I'm looking forward to getting home and having a proper cup of English tea out of my Giro d'Italia Stacey Snyder mug, which is waiting for me at home. And finally, a big thank you to the Tour de France and ASO themselves. Now, as journalists, we're supposed to be coolly detached from all of this, and we're supposed to be able to criticise when necessary, and we do. But a big thank you to the Tour de France, because without the Tour de France, well, we wouldn't be here, would we?
There'd be no Tour de France.
Exactly.
Wow. I mean, I think on this note, bye-bye.
Yes. Thank you very much, Francois.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.